So picture this. You have a CEO, right? And they are staring at this stunning multi-million-dollar dashboard.
Oh, yeah, the absolute dream scenario for any executive.
Exactly. They are looking at real-time global sales, user retention, inventory forecasts, all of it. And they make this massive company-altering pivot based entirely on what they see. They just make the call.
Let me guess, there's a catch.
A huge one. The data on that screen was actually, well, it was 24 hours out of date.
Ouch.
Yeah, because a single invisible data pipeline broke at like 2:00 a.m. and absolutely nobody noticed. So today we are talking about the people who prevent those multi-million dollar disasters.
The unsung heroes, really.
Truly, we are jumping into a deep dive today on an extensive no-nonsense 2026 guide. It's all about the Azure data engineer skills that are actually required right now.
And you know, the timing on this is crucial for you listening, because businesses today, they are hoarding more information than at any point in human
Oh,
history.
for sure. Terabytes upon terabyte.
Right. But raw information is basically useless. It's chaotic, it's messy. Organizations are desperately trying to turn that chaos into something a CEO can actually, use safely.
Safely being the operative word there.
Exactly. And the source material we are looking at today provides the blueprint for the exact professionals who build the machinery to make that happen.
So our mission for you today is basically to cut through the noise. We want to give you a fast, comprehensive shortcut to understanding what this role actually is, what technical skills are genuinely required now that we are in 2026, and honestly, how to avoid the outdated advice floating around the internet.
Because there is a lot of bad advice out there.
So much. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of how to do the job, let's establish what the job actually is. The guide defines an Azure data engineer as a cloud professional who builds the pipelines that move raw data into clean, query-ready formats.
Right.
But it uses an analogy that I think frames this perfectly. Think of a data analyst as like a head chef at a high-end restaurant.
Okay, I like that.
The data engineer is the person who built the kitchens, designed the plumbing, stocked the pantry, and made sure the raw ingredients arrived fresh at the loading dock every single morning.
Which means, if the kitchen isn't built right, the chef cannot cook. I mean, it's that simple. The guide is very deliberate in separating this role from the others in the tech ecosystem. Analysts are the ones interpreting the data. Data scientists are using it to build those fancy predictive machine learning
Oh, the
models.
AI stuff.
Exactly. And cloud engineers are managing the general infrastructure, the virtual machines, the overarching security. But data engineers, they specialize strictly in the movement and the structuring of the data itself.
Let me push on that kitchen analogy for a second, though. If they're building the kitchen, are they essentially just highly technical plumbers, like just running pipes and making sure the water doesn't flood the building?
Well, plumber captures the pipeline aspect, sure, but it kind of understates the architectural logic required. They're more like civil engineers for an entire city's water supply.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because flooding the building, in our context, means delivering bad, duplicated, or corrupted data. If a data engineer fails, the whole reservoir is contaminated.
Right, because it all flows downstream.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if you have the most brilliant data scientist in the world. If they are feeding bad data into an AI model, the model's predictions will be completely wrong. This foundational engineering is, frankly, the ultimate bottleneck for every modern business initiative.
And that bottleneck totally explains the market reality highlighted in the source, particularly in India, which is driving a massive portion of the global cloud data workforce right now.
The demand there is unbelievable.
It's outstripping supply by a mile, and the salaries show it. The guide notes that freshers are entering at roughly 4.5 to 8 lakhs per annum.
Which is really strong for an entry-level role.
Yeah, and mid-level engineers with just 3 to 5 years of experience, they're seeing 12 to 20 lakhs. And seniors are commanding 18 to 35 lakhs or even higher.
The specialized nature of the cloud is what really drives those numbers up. I mean, general IT support or basic web development, that's become highly saturated.
Right, everyone kind of knows how to do that now.
Exactly. But an engineer who understands how to handle like petabytes of data securely in Microsoft Azure, that is rare. Companies are realizing that their really expensive AI and analytics teams are just sitting around waiting for clean data.
So they're basically paying people to do nothing until the data gets there.
Yeah, pretty much. The supply of professionals who can fix that specific plumbing issue is incredibly tight.
Well, if the payoff is that high, we really need to look at the actual tools required to, build this kitchen. And the source is blunt. It starts with SQL. It actually calls SQL absolute and non-negotiable.
It really is. It is the most frequently tested skill in every single interview for this role. And we aren't just talking about writing a basic select statement to pull a list of names.
Like the tutorials show you.
Right, the beginner stuff. The guide specifies complex joins, common table expressions, and window functions.
Window functions.
Yeah, things like calculating running totals or ranking rows across millions of records simultaneously.
Let's be honest for a second, though. We're staring down 2026 here. If I'm listening to this, I'm probably thinking, you know, I can just open up ChatGPT or GitHub Copilot and just ask it to write my complex SQL joins for me in 3 seconds.
Sure.
So why on earth are companies still failing candidates over a language that an AI can write for you?
That's a great point. And the thing is, AI is incredibly good at syntax. It will write the code perfectly if you give it the exact parameters. But the AI doesn't know your company's business logic.
Right.
And more importantly, it doesn't understand the physical data model. The guide really highlights that engineers must understand things like star schemas, snowflake schemas, fact tables, and dimension tables.
Okay, let's pause right there. Because if you are listening to this on your commute or at the gym, terms like star schema and fact tables might just sound like a giant wall of jargon.
Fair enough.
So break that down for us. What actually is a fact table versus a dimension table?
Okay, so let's say you run a massive retail chain, right? A fact table records the actual event, the transaction itself. So it basically just says transaction 101, shoe sold for $50.
Okay, pretty straightforward.
Right, but that fact alone isn't very helpful for a business. You need context. Who bought it? Which store sold it? What brand was the shoe?
Oh, I see.
All of that context, that lives in the dimension tables. You have a customer dimension table, a store location dimension table, and a product dimension table.
So a star schema is just, what, the fact table sitting in the middle, connected to all these dimension tables around it, like literally shaped like a star.
Yes, exactly. And understanding how to design that specific structure is something AI really struggles to do from scratch.
Because it doesn't know what context the business actually cares about.
Exactly. It requires understanding the business goals. If a candidate relies entirely on AI for the SQL syntax, but they don't understand that underlying schema, they will write queries that technically run, but they force the database to scan in highly inefficient ways.
Oh, and when that hits scale.
Yeah. When that query hits a billion rows of data, it just crashes the whole system.
So you can't troubleshoot the system if you don't understand the physics of how the data is stored in the first place.
Precisely.
That actually transitions really nicely to the second foundational tool the guide talks about, Python. It says Python is the primary programming language here, but it clarifies you aren't using it to build web apps. You're using it for automation and PySpark.
PySpark is the critical term there. I mean, Python is incredibly versatile, but native Python really struggles when a data set gets too large for a single computer's memory.
It just chokes on it.
Yeah. So PySpark is the Python interface for Apache Spark, which is an engine designed specifically for massive scale.
And this brings up a huge conceptual shift mentioned in the guide. The difference between ETL and ELT. Extract, transform, load versus extract, load, transform.
Yes, the big shift.
I mean, it sounds like we're just rearranging three letters, but the guide makes it very clear this is a massive evolution in the industry.
It really is. Historically, we relied on ETL. You extracted data from a source, you transformed it, meaning you cleaned it, filtered it, structured it on a completely separate server.
Okay.
And then, only then, you load it into your final database. You clean the data before you stored it, because storage used to be really expensive and databases were super fragile.
So if I'm like moving into a new house, ETL is making sure every single piece of furniture is perfectly polished and shrink-wrapped in the driveway before I'm even allowed to bring it through the front door.
I love that. Yeah, that works perfectly as a visual. But ELT flips the whole process around. You extract the raw data and you load it directly into the cloud storage as is.
So you just dump it all in the living room.
Exactly. Dump it all in the living room in boxes. And then you use the massive power of the cloud to transform it right there in place whenever you need to.
Why the sudden shift, though? Why is everyone doing ELT now?
Well, it comes down to the economics of cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
Cloud storage is just incredibly cheap now. You can store petabytes of messy, raw data for fractions of a penny. Wow.
And the processing engines sitting on top of that storage have become unbelievably fast. So there is literally no need to clean it in the driveway anymore.
But how are these processing engines so fast? You mentioned Apache Spark earlier when we talked about Python. The guide lists distributed processing as a non-negotiable big data skill.
Right.
What is actually happening under the hood when we say distributed processing?
So distributed processing is basically the secret to modern speed.
Yeah.
Imagine you have a data set of 1 billion rows and you ask one regular computer to process it. It might take a week.
Right.
Apache Spark takes that massive data set, chops it up into 10,000 tiny pieces, and hands those pieces to 10,000 different computers to process simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they all finish their tiny chunk in a few seconds, and then Spark just stitches the answer back together.
It's the ultimate divide and conquer.
And to make that even faster, the source mentions using columnar file formats. It specifically points out Parquet and Delta Lake. For you listening trying to visualize this, how is a columnar format different from just, say, an enormous Excel spreadsheet?
Okay, think about how you naturally read a spreadsheet. It's row-based. If you want to find the average price of all items sold and you have a million rows, a row beep system has to read row one completely.
Meaning it reads the name, the date, the location, and the price.
Right, and then it moves to row two, does the same thing, and so on. It reads a massive amount of irrelevant data just to find the prices. But a columnar format, like Parquet, stores data by column, not by row.
Wait, so all the prices are physically stored together in one continuous block?
Exactly. They're grouped together. So when you ask for the average price, the engine just grabs that one block of prices, completely ignoring the names and dates and locations.
That's brilliant.
It is. It reads maybe 1% of the data it would have otherwise, making the query hundreds of times faster.
Okay, so if SQL and Python are the hand tools, and ELT and Parquet are the techniques, we need to talk about the actual workshop where all of this happens.
The Azure environment.
Right. The source outlines the Azure environment, and it splits it into two distinct eras. You have the classic stack, and then this massive 2026 shift to Microsoft Fabric. Let's start with the classic stuff.
So the classic stack is really a collection of distinct specialized tools. First, you have Azure Data Factory, or ADF. The guide refers to this as the conveyor belt.
The conveyor belt.
Yeah, because it orchestrates the movement. It doesn't actually process the data. It just schedules when data moves from point A to point B.
Okay, and then you have Azure Databricks.
Databricks is the heavy machinery. It's an environment optimized for that distributed Apache Spark processing we just discussed. When the data is massive and needs complex transformations, ADF hands it off to Databricks.
Got it.
And once Databricks is done, the clean data usually goes to Azure Snaps Analytics, which is the enterprise data warehouse where the analysts actually run their queries.
And underneath all of these separate tools holding the actual data is Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2.
Right.
So in this classic stack, an engineer basically has to stitch together the conveyor belt, the heavy machinery, the warehouse, and the storage layer. It sounds like buying a piece of land and having to hire a separate plumber, a separate electrician, and a separate carpenter, and just kind of hoping you can manage them well enough that they actually talk to each other.
That's a really good way to put it. It requires a lot of integration effort. You are managing security, networking, and access across four or five completely different services.
Sounds like a headache.
It can be. But in 2026, Microsoft pushed heavily into a new paradigm with Microsoft Fabric. The guide describes Fabric as a unified SaaS software as a service analytics platform.
So the classic stack is hiring all those individual contractors. Microsoft Fabric is like buying a pre-built smart home, where the plumbing, the electricity, and the security system are already wired into the same central brain.
Yes. And that central brain is called OneLake.
OneLake?
Right. In the classic stack, you often had to literally copy data from your data lake into your data warehouse just to query it. With OneLake, Microsoft treats it like OneDrive for your entire enterprise. All the tools in Fabric, the data movement, the Spark processing, the warehousing, and even Power BI for the dashboards, they all sit on top of OneLake.
So no more copying data back and forth.
Exactly. You store the data once in a format like Parquet, and every single tool can access it without copying it.
That is huge. And this shift has completely upended the certification path, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because the guide issues a very clear warning for anyone trying to break into this field right now.
It does.
It says the old certification, the DP203 Azure Data Engineer Exam, was officially retired in 2025. So if you are out there watching tutorials or buying courses aimed at the DP203, you are studying for a ghost.
You're wasting your time.
Yeah. The target in 2026 is the DP700, the Fabric Data Engineer Associate Certification.
But, and this is important, the guide gives a really necessary reality check here. Fabric is the future, yes. It is where Microsoft is pushing everyone. But there are thousands of massive global enterprises that built their systems on the classic stack 3, 4, or 5 years ago.
And they're not just going to throw that all away.
Exactly. They have live, mission-critical environments running on Data Factory and Databricks today. They aren't going to just shut those down overnight.
So a smart engineer in 2026 is kind of stuck in a dual reality. You have to learn the sleek, unified fabric environment to pass the new certifications and build the new projects, but you still have to really understand the classic disconnected stack because, honestly, you'll probably be hired to maintain and eventually migrate those legacy systems.
And that dual knowledge is really what separates a senior engineer from a total beginner. I mean, Fabric abstracts a lot of the complexity away, which is nice, but under the hood, it still uses pipelines, it still uses Apache Spark, and it still requires really solid data modeling. Mm. If you only know how to click the shiny buttons in Fabric, but you don't understand the underlying mechanics of distributed processing, you won't have any idea how to fix the pipeline when it inevitably fails.
Which brings us to the next point. Knowing what you need to learn, SQL, Python, Spark, Fabric, and the classic stack, that is really only half the battle.
Oh, absolutely.
The source material spends a lot of time on how to actually acquire these skills without falling into the traps that ruin most beginners.
Yeah, and it sets a very realistic timeline. It suggests 4 to 6 months of consistent daily effort to go from a beginner to job ready. You do not learn this in a weekend boot camp.
No shortcuts.
Nope. Spend the first month purely on SQL and Python, the second on cloud storage and basic pipelines, the third on Databricks and Spark, and the final stretch on Fabric and end-to-end projects.
And during that multi-month timeline, there is a massive trap the guide warns about. They call it tutorial hell.
Oh, I've been there. We all have. Tutorial hell is that false sense of productivity you get from watching endless YouTube tutorials or Udemy courses. You watch the instructor build a pipeline, you nod along, you feel like you totally understand it.
But you never actually open the Azure portal and build it yourself.
Exactly. It's like watching someone else go to the gym and thinking you're the one getting stronger.
It doesn't work like that.
Not at all. The guide says employers do not care about a stack of completion certificates. They want to see a GitHub repository. They want to see an end-to-end Azure Data Factory pipeline that you designed, you coded, and you deployed. Because when you build it yourself, you run into the real-world bugs that the tutorials conveniently edit out.
Oh, those real-world bugs. And those bugs are where you learn the hidden differentiator for data engineers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Performance and cost optimization.
Yes, that is the magic phrase.
Let's really dig into that, because the source points out that in cloud computing, a data engineer isn't just some IT professional building infrastructure. If they write a sloppy pipeline, they are literally burning the company's money. They act as, like, financial guardians for the cloud budget.
That's a perfect description.
How does a bad query actually cost a company real money?
Well, in the cloud, you don't buy servers outright. You rent computing power by the second. Providers bill you based on how much data you scan and how much CPU power you use.
Okay.
So if you write a terrible SQL query that forces the system to scan 10 petabytes of historical data just to find one single transaction from yesterday,
the system will actually do it.
Oh, the cloud provider will happily spin up massive compute clusters to do exactly what you ask, and they will charge you thousands of dollars for that single search.
Just to find one transaction.
Yes. A good data engineer prevents that by using techniques like partitioning.
Okay, break down partitioning for us. If I'm trying to visualize how that actually saves money, Sure. What is it?
Imagine a massive filing cabinet with millions of loose paper shoved in it. That is unpartitioned data. To find a specific invoice from May 2026, you have to look at every single piece of paper.
Which takes forever and costs a fortune in compute time.
Exactly. Partitioning is simply organizing the data into folders by year and then subfolders by month. So when the query runs, the system goes straight to the 2026 folder, then directly to the May folder, and it only scans a few hundred documents.
Oh, I see.
The compute time drops from hours to literally seconds, and the cost drops from $100 to, like, 4 cents.
That is incredible. And I'm guessing employers notice that kind of thing immediately.
Instantly. If you can walk into an interview and explain how your partitioning strategy or your use of Parquet files reduced a pipeline's compute cost by 40%, you aren't just an engineer anymore. You are directly impacting the bottom line. That is exactly how you unlock those 30 lakh plus senior salaries.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
And communicating that value brings up the final pillar the guide emphasizes, which is soft skills.
Technical skills get your resume past the filter, but soft skills are what actually get you hired and promoted.
Right, because you have to talk to people.
You have to be able to explain to a non-technical marketing director why their dashboard is broken. And you have to do it without using words like Spark or Delta Lake.
Or partitioning.
Exactly. You have to calmly debug pipelines when executives are panicking. And frankly, you have to embrace constant learning.
Because the ground is always shifting beneath your feet in tech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the move from the classic stack to Microsoft Fabric proves that the tools you learn today will just be legacy systems in 5 years.
Very true.
So to quickly recap the journey for you listening today, if you are targeting an Azure data engineer role in 2026, you start with the non-negotiables. Deep foundational knowledge of SQL, data modeling, and Python. You need to really grasp the logic of ELT, distributed processing with Spark, and columnar storage like Parquet.
And don't forget the dual reality.
Right. Mastering the dual reality of the cloud, understanding the legacy components of the classic stack, while targeting the unified future of Microsoft Fabric and that new DP700 certification. And above all, you have to escape tutorial hell by building hands-on projects that proves you can optimize pipelines and protect the company's cloud budget.
It's definitely a demanding roadmap, but the clarity of the path is what makes it achievable. It really all starts with writing that first complex SQL query.
It really does. But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a larger question to ponder based on everything we've uncovered in this deep dive. We talked extensively about how Microsoft Fabric is pushing to unify data engineering, data warehousing, and business intelligence dashboards into one single seamless platform. It's all merging into one lake. So if the tools continue to abstract away the heavy plumbing, will the strict historical lines between a data engineer, a data analyst, and a cloud engineer eventually blur completely? Will the data engineer of 2030 even exist as a distinct job title? Or will the fundamental messy reality of business data mean that the world will always need someone highly specialized to roll up their sleeves and build the kitchen? Keep exploring, keep building, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.